Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров «Персональный спутник».
Again, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's another Sunday that I'm with you. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And as always, when you sit down with your cup of coffee, your orange juice, breakfast, your tea, your hot chocolate, on a Sunday morning at this time, you're listening to The Master Plan. The number to call is 347-637-3220. 347 to the one and only me. Got a great show in store for you today. This morning, we're going to start the show off. And maybe it may last a whole hour, it may not, depending on how the show goes. But we're going to concentrate on the NFL. But we're going to concentrate on a different side of the NFL today. Very interesting day today in the NFL for those that really keep track of what's happening in the NFL on and off the field. Well, this is not on the field that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about off the field. We're going to be talking about who's going to be the next NFL Players Association Executive Director. Today is an election for that one position. Now, as you know, Damar Smith, who's been handling it for several years now, is one of the candidates. But and I think this is unprecedented, the amount of candidates that the NFLPA has going for it now that's up for election. We're talking about, including Damar Smith, 9 candidates that are vying for that one top spot in the NFL as the executive director. Now, there's a number of reasons that this year's class is so large. The union's deliberately combative relationship with Roger Goodell has begun to wear on many players as revenue and profits for the league have skyrocketed. Player salary has mostly remained stagnant. What else is new? That's almost an everyday workforce that the ones that manage salaries are soaring, and the people that are making the money for the management and the owners have remained stagnant. So that's nothing new. That's just that's business as usual, I should say. Many players continue to be displeased with the step the league has taken toward player health and safety and post-career benefits. Now, that has to do with concussion protocol that has to do with certain physical problems players have had on while they're active and inactive or retired. And that also has to do with the league now wanting to cut the preseason schedule and increase the regular season schedule. So, and the fact is the things that have taken place this year and have been taking place over the years since this present collective bargaining agreement has been in place. Goodell's continued and largely unchecked super judiciary power creep. Now, that, what I'm talking about is that's just, excuse me, that's what I'm talking about. That up until this time, Roger Goodell was judge, and quite naturally, excuse me, the players got a rough deal, or not a fair deal, in my opinion, and I voice it over here. Not all the time, but there's been times when players have gotten raw deals, and I felt that Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson got raw deals. Not that they shouldn't have gotten punished, but the way Roger Goodell went about it. So, quite naturally, when you get players like that, when you see things like that from Roger Goodell and other things that have taken place over the years, you get players' discontent, upper management in the Players Association, including DeMar Smith. And that's why I'm saying that this is happening because the total tonnage of these complaints have made the leadership of an already weak union look downright vulnerable, and the barrier to entry appears comically, if temporarily, low. This is something I'm going to read from an article, okay? I'm going to read the class of NFLPA Executive Director hopefuls, and then we'll go from there. Because there's one guy, one of these candidates, it looks like it's a pretty interesting platform that he's on, and I want to get it out because I think it's something that a lot of people that listen to me can relate to. So let me go down these candidates and then talk about the one candidate that I found very interesting. First candidate up is a Jason Belzer. Belzer has been involved with the union for 10 years and is the current Senior Director of Player Services. He played in the NFL for 11 years, mostly at safety for the Colts, and is seen as one of the major threats to unseat DeMar Smith. He was also originally left off the ballot for reasons that haven't quite been explained and was added on after the deadline for reasons that haven't been quite explained. The likely explanation, though, is that while seemingly easy to be nominated for the election, as should become obviously shortly, Belzer only got around to filling his paperwork at the very last minute. Why? Because his candidacy is essentially a surprise swift voting of Smith, whom he has apparently been undermining for months. Belzer is considered one of the key challengers to Smith. Okay, the next guy up is Sean Gilbert, and I think you guys know Sean Gilbert. He played 11 seasons for the Carolina Panthers, if I'm not mistaken. He's a former defensive lineman. He's essentially running as not DeMar Smith. Has passed around a spreadsheet detailing the damage done by Smith accepting 47% of total net revenue instead of the 59% the players received under the old collective bargaining agreement percentage points, about a 20% decrease, is substantial. Gilbert says that could be worth up to $10 billion. In the NFL, player compensation is limited by the cap, the size of which is pegged to league revenue, As a matter, as the ladder rises, so does the. You know what? I'm going to get into this because I want to give you what Sean Gilbert has to say about this. It's a nice article, so I'm not going to read that. But what he said about the 20% decrease, that's pretty bad. To reclaim some of the ground ceded by Smith, Gilbert has some ideas. First, he thinks that the union should threaten the league with claims of collusion, which doesn't seem like such a bad idea, as collusion is rampant and obvious in many corners of the league, from restricted free agency reprimanding Dallas and Washington when they went over the cap for not, for not colluding to depress player pay in the uncapped season. Second, he thinks the current players should strongly consider a move to 18 games in the regular season, which players have been uniformly against, to improve both profits and league office relations. 2012, Gilbert won a workman's compensation lawsuit alleging that he had incurred 100% permanent disability, meaning he was rendered permanently and completely unable to work, and if he were to take a job, would presumably be under suspicious, would presumably be under suspicion of fraud. As a result of a cumulative trauma injury to various parts of his body while playing football, the full weight of his award fell to the Raiders because the last year he was exposed to this physical harm was in Oakland, where he played six games in 2003 after playing eight and nine games in the previous two seasons. Gilbert's body is a mountain, being that he's a mountain of a man with the third overall pick in 1992 draft. Remained healthy enough to play a full 16 games in just five of his 11 seasons. The next guy up on the docket, and this is not the player, this is just the Robert Griffin. No, I'm not talking about Robert Griffin III. This is a guy who's been a former player. He played 13 years at safety, and most of that time he played with the Vikings. He was a Vikings player rep, served 7 years on the NFLPA's executive committee, and has been involved in the push to educate players and fans about the effects of brain injury. He is one of the more vanilla candidates, qualified mainly on the strength of having been a player rather than any labor law and negotiation experience. His biggest appeal is, according to him, his understanding of the full arc of players' careers, from entering the league as a rookie through to retirement, and the need for continued benefits after leaving the league. Like many other old union heads, he is a supporter of the more connival method of league relations in place during the tenure of Gene Upshur, who once said, "The bottom line is I don't work for retired players. They don't hire me, and they can't fire me. They can complain about me all day. They can have their opinion, but the active players have the vote. That's who pays my salary." They, meaning the retirees, say they don't have anybody in the bargaining room. Well, they don't, and they never will. I'm the only one in that room. They're not bargaining. They're not in the bargaining unit. They don't even have a vote. That's the mindset of Robert Griffin. Let's talk about the next candidate, Rob London. A few facts about Robert London, who is apparently a sports agent of some renown. He is a former vice president of Doe Loans Sports and Entertainment LLC. He was considered for the Raiders GM job in 2011. According to Pro Football Talk, he doesn't appear to be an NFLPA certified contract advisor, meaning he doesn't seem to be a certified agent. He was briefly linked with a potential role at Roc Nation Sports in 2013. His most recent appearance in the news was issuing an exclusive press release to FoxSports.com after his then-client, Adam Muume, famously left the NFL Combine because God told him to do so. The exclusive newsworthy press release from the NFL super agent decided I can no longer serve as a marketing advisor for NFL prospect and former San Diego State running back Adam Buruma. When Adam initially hired me as one of his advisors, I had a great hope he would indeed put forth the necessary work and dedication from a comprehensive point of view that it takes to become a successful NFL prospect. The pre-draft process calls for every individual player to sharpen both their minds as well as their bodies during this arduous period. While Adam had indeed succeeded in building his physique, I cannot with confidence say the same regarding his mental preparation for this endeavor. Next one we go to, and this guy looks like he is a, if I'm not mistaken, I think I know, I don't know this one. James Acho. Acho is one of three attorneys up for the job. He is known for, Acho, who says his practice that dedicates about 20% of his time to sports law, now represents a number of former NFL players and other athletes individually. Most of them played for local Detroit teams. His highest achievement appears to be involvement in a 2003 class action suit involving about 1,100 former Major League Baseball players who were active from 1947 through 1980, the year a new CBA went into place that awarded players benefits and pensions, but froze out former players and changed the requirements for receiving these benefits. It was a right-headed, admirable case to take up. The case began in a Los Angeles trial court where the judge agreed the players were in the moral right, but that the statute of limitations had obviously long ago and dismissed the case. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals denied the appeal some years later, in 2011, by which time the class of players numbered just 800 after many members had passed away. Major League Baseball agreed to pay the survivors up to $10,000 in charitable donations. Jesus. To our knowledge, the union has not tried simply asking the NFL for money as charity. Acho does not appear to believe that there is very much wrong with the current labor relations in the NFL. And quite frankly, he said in an interview with the Detroit Free Press, I think there's only one area that's been neglected, and that is long-term health care for players. His top priority would be to ensure players have medical coverage until age 65. Another guy here is Arthur McAfee. Arthur McAfee has worked with the NCAA as an enforcement representative, conducted independent investigations at Miami and Alabama in the 90s, spent a few years working as an NFL agent, spent 17 years as staff counsel for the NFLPA, where he helped negotiate the universally panned 2011 CBA that a lot of people thought the players got the raw end of the deal, and currently heads the McAfee Group, which is a marketing, consulting, and legal affairs company. I wasn't really able to find anything. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Guy's name is Andrew Smith. He's another lawyer. He has set up a single-purpose website to educate the public and presumably the 32 player reps about why he should be the next director of the NFLPA. And in the main section titled Why Andrew Smith Should Be the Next Executive Director of the NFLPA, Smith makes several claims about his candidacy. Many of these are not outwardly substantive. Reasons a player representative might entrust labor relations in a multi-billion-dollar business with the sweeping medical, institutional, and super judiciary concerns to a lawyer who for more than 8 years has been protecting the legal rights of active and retired players in matters ranging from financial losses contract issues, insurance claims, criminal matters, real estate issues, business ventures, trademarks, endorsements, prenuptials, paternity, and matrimonial issues. One, however, is Smith has made case law in significant national employment and labor cases. Smith, but in those cases that he was up, he has lost two of the three cases. That is how he set national precedent. So I'm not going to read all that. I'm just giving you the overview of the candidates here. Next guy here is John Stufflebeam. He's a former vice admiral and director of Navy staff. I don't know how this guy got in here, but it is what it is. His wartime credentials are considerable. He was a fighter pilot in multiple global conflicts, involved in Manuel Noriega's capture, worked with the White House during Desert Storm, and commanded the 6th Fleet from 2005 to 2007. He was also a punter with the Naval Academy under then-coach Steve Belichick, and eventually punted in preseason for the Detroit Lions, where he met special teams coach Bill Belichick. Stufflebeam is one of the dove candidates, saying the league and players need to repair their relationship and should build on the positives of the current CBA, such as they are, instead of tearing it up and starting fresh. Excuse me. Proving these relationships would be his top concern if he were elected. Payne has two other foundational ideas that he hasn't mentioned at much length, but in some key ways, their existence is more important than their content. The quote for him is, "I always do things in threes, because as a fighter pilot, you always had a stick in your hand and a throttle in the other, so you always had three fingers free." Stufflebeam currently runs a crisis management consulting business, NJS Group, whose clients include the Houston Texans and, yes, the New England Patriots. NFL franchise crisis management is perhaps a natural fit for the former vice admiral, given his war record. He was also a Pentagon spokesman post 9/11, and also because he has a wealth of personal experience in the types of crisis an NFL team might encounter. In 2008, Stufflebeam was reprimanded after being convicted of lying during an official investigation into an inappropriate relationship with a federal worker beginning in 1989. He was eventually demoted to rear admiral and fired from his post as staff director. And then we have Damar Smith. Excuse me. Anyway, Damar Smith himself is why we're here with such a varied, voluminous company. He spearheaded the 2011 CBA albatross and has overseen the union as it's managed to turn being undermined into a matter of course, often due to grave tactical errors and misreadings, while fostering an increasingly acrimonious relationship with the NFL legal office. Now, you got to understand that there's two people that are candidates that were working in the office. One of them supposedly is trying to has been undermining Damar Smith for years. So, Roger Goodell and the executive offices in the NFL have been royally screwing up, and the union hasn't been able to really capitalize on that. And reason being is because they've had their own issues in their own house, meaning the NFLPA executive committee and executive offices have had their own issues in their own house. Smith has also co-sected himself against change. going as far as to tell his challengers go directly into the NFLPA offices to review information about the 32-team representative voters and borrowing against future salary caps to boost the caps during and immediately after the last time he was set up for election. That kind of cutthroat self-preservation doesn't exactly breed confidence at the top of the union, and the state of perpetual impotence and open combat has left enough people wondering if something else, anything else, might work better. And that's the thing. Few enough people have held this role, which is unique in many ways, given the many legal allowances granted to the NFL. The large role of the media in the day-to-day and the high volume but basic efficacy of its during negotiations and the evolving medical concerns about the basic premise of the industry, that's who to say a figurehead leader who has a sharp organizational mind like Stufflebeam with Ridiculous might even work out better. Andrew Smith, for his part, seems to at least grasp the outrageousness of many of the publicly available NFLPA finances. Maybe he could do something about rectifying them. These scenarios are unlikely, but not impossible. The union has been so weak for so long that it's fostered an environment where this list of clowns can make some legitimate claim. That's maybe the clearest indicator that things really have to change. Now, excuse me for a minute. Now, one of the candidates I talked about was Sean Gilbert, former defensive lineman, like I said, for 11 years in the NFL, won a lawsuit against the NFL. And his candidacy, I'm going to read to you what he has to say about what he thinks should be done, or one of the things he thinks should be done in the NFL. And it's very interesting because it jumps on several fronts. So let me talk about this. I'm going to read this article. The former article came from Deadspin about the candidates. This article came from ProFootballTalk.com. On Saturday, former NFL player Sean Gilbert made his initial case to the voters for the position of NFLPA executive director. And he finally has unveiled a plan for a collusion claim that could then be used to terminate the current labor deal. Pro Football Talk has obtained a copy of Gilbert's presentation to the NFL Board of Players representatives. In those remarks, Gilbert explained that the NFL's funding rule for fully guaranteed contracts, as used by the league, constitutes an ongoing collusion violation. And the funding rule appears at Article 26, Section 9 of the CBA. And I'm going to read you, after I finish reading this about Gilbert, the article that he references. Gilbert's argument seizes on a notion that the CBA states only that the NFL may require teams to deposit future fully guaranteed payments into escrow. The argument will be that the NFL at some point turned the may into a must, preventing teams from putting fully guaranteed payments into the future years of contracts unless the owners fund those amounts by putting money in escrow, even if the owners have the financial resources to honor the future salaries commitments. The NFL surely will respond to this contention by arguing that the NFLPA already has given the NFL blanket authority to mandate funding by using the words may require. The NFLPA under Gilbert would argue that the mechanism was put in place to ensure the future guarantees made by the teams with questionable financial resources would be honored, and that the NFL has twisted a provision aimed at protecting players against franchises that may fold into a vehicle for suppressing guaranteed payments by requiring all teams to fund future full guarantees up front, regardless of whether the owner of a given team has the wherewithal to make the future guaranteed payments. It's an argument that relies on nuance along with the understanding of the specific purpose, origin of the funding rule. Earlier this week, in the wake of a contract signed by the Dolphins defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh that includes $59.955 million in fully guarantees, which Stephen Ross had to fund up front, despite being a multi-billionaire, Pro Football Talk posed basic questions regarding the purpose and origin of the funding rule to the NFL. The NFL declined to provide any information beyond pointing out that the funding rule is a collectively bargained provision. The collusion claims faces other potential obstacles. NFLPA executive director, candidate, and practicing lawyer Andrew Smith said on Friday, PFT Live, on NBC Sports Radio, that the 90-day window for filing a collusion claim based on Gilbert's idea has expired by now. Based on the argument that the NFLPA knew or should have known about the potential collusion claim, from the moment Gilbert said he was aware of a specific form of collusion that was essentially hiding in plain sight. Andrew Smith contends that the failure of the NFLPA to obtain the information from Gilbert or to otherwise figure out the argument on its own within the 90 days after Gilbert suggested the existence of a silver bullet collusion claim makes it impossible to bring the claim within the next 90 days. From Gilbert's perspective, none of that matters if it helps him win the election. Keep him from being reelected in 3 years if the effort to terminate the CBA via a collusion claim fails. The existence of an intriguing, creative argument for the existence of collusion can hurt his chances of getting the job. Now, there's two ways I can go with this. I'm going to go this way, and then I'm going to go to the Article 26, Section 9, and break that down a little bit more. And like I said, Sean Gilbert presented himself on Saturday to the NFL players' representative, but he didn't just simply outline a plan for proving collusion. He also had a plan for generating revenue. Gilbert remarks, a copy of which have been released to the media, include a proposal for the establishment of a fantasy football platform by the NFLPA. Now listen to this. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to go through all this and to get to Sean Gilbert. Last year, FanDuel, which is a, for those who play fantasy football, that's a daily league that you can wager on all the sports, that not just fantasy football. FanDuel took in $50 million. This year, they're expected to bring in $100 million and be valued at $1 billion. Create our own fantasy football site. The revenue from an in-house fantasy football platform presumably would offset dues payments. Gilbert proposes getting rid of dues altogether. And with that, other candidates are welcome to send their remarks on Gilbert's ideas are getting attention in this space because they are interesting, and he sent them to Pro Football Talk. So one of the things he's proposing is to set up a fantasy football site that has to do with the Players Association, that they get the revenue from it, which is very interesting. Stay tuned. That may be something down the road. One of the other candidates may adopt that idea and run with it. If Damaris Smith is still the executive director, maybe he'll adopt that or do some type of research into seeing how viable that is for revenue for the Players Association. That's very interesting. When I read that, and I wanted to get that out there to you guys, and maybe go look up on the site about Sean Gilbert and his NFLPA presentation and get some more information about it and see if that's pretty interesting. And I know FanDuel and DraftKings and some of these other daily sites probably wouldn't appreciate that because that'll be taking the revenue away from themselves. And they may be able to find a way to prevent the NFL Players Association, if they decide to get into it, prevent them from adopting something like that. I can't see how they could, but you never know. The NFLPA may have their own fantasy football site. Who knows? NFLPA, I should say, could have their own fantasy football site. Anything's possible to compete with the two big guys, DraftKings and FanDuel. Anything's possible. Well, like I said, Sean Gilbert referenced Article 26, Section 9 of the CBA. And I'm going to break this down. I'm going to give you a scenario break it down to exactly what this means. All right. So let's take a look at this. Colin Kaepernick signed a 6-year extension that could be worth as much as $126 million. The base deal is worth $114 million, with $12 million in potential escalators. It contains $60 million in total guarantees, which approximately $13 million fully guaranteed and $48 million in injury guarantees. A full discussion and Section 9, I'll put it this way. Section 9 discusses the funding requirements for dirt and guaranteed money in an NFL contract. The section states, in part, the NFL may require that a prescribed date certain, each club must deposit into a segregated account the present value calculated using the discount rate less than $2 million of deferred and guaranteed compensation owed by the club with respect to club funding of player contracts involving deferred or guaranteed compensation. The present value of any future salaries payable to a player pursuant to an injury guarantee provision in his NFL player contract should not be considered owed by a club under this section until after the club has acknowledged that the player's injury qualifies him to receive the future payments. This section allows the NFL to require teams placed on all future guaranteed money except for injury guarantees at a given point on the calendar into a bank account. When we can look at Jimmy Ward's contract as an example. I'm sorry, I shouldn't use Colin Kaepernick's. I use Jimmy Ward. All right, Jimmy Ward's rookie deal is a 4-year deal worth $7,112,524 with an option for the fifth year. The first three seasons of the Ward's deal are fully guaranteed with skill, cap, and injury release. Excluding his signing bonus, that, and quite naturally, that's paid up front, that appears to cover $2,229,888 in base salary and bonuses. As I'm reading Section 9, that means the 49ers have to front that much cash now. So they put that much cash up into this fund or whatever. This section of the CBA has not been frequently discussed, but if you Google it, you'll find a few things. From what I've seen, the league justifies this requirement by saying it's to protect the players if a club were to go bankrupt. Given the amount of cash flowing into NFL coffers, that's a pretty amusing notion. The only potentially reasonable argument I can see in the favor of it could be for teams that might have cash flow issues because of big projects. By that, I specifically talk about new stadiums. The 49ers are and needed some help in getting on a stadium, but they're paying the vast majority of the owned on this stadium. They'll get some upfront money through the SBL sales, but even those have financing options. That and the fact that the naming rights pays out over 20 years mean there will be a good chunk of money, the 49ers cash flow, going to non-players' costs. The 49ers should do fine in making the money back many times over this potential cash flow, cash cow facility, but for now, cash flow could be a bit of an issue. Whether the reasoning for this funding rule is BS or not, it's there, and the teams can use that as an excuse for the many rolling guarantees we see in contracts. In Colin Kaepernick's recent contract extension, future salaries become guaranteed on April 1st of each league year. In each of those years, then, the funding for the following season's salary would thus need to be set aside. So, we're in year 2015. The funding for 2016 needs to be set aside, so it's there, so the teams can use it, and the player supposedly can be protected from not getting paid if something happens to the team. It's the way that 49ers have done business. Yes, they could conceivably release cap before April 1st of each year for skill or cap reasons, but does anybody actually think that will happen? Well, it can happen. I'm not saying it won't happen, but it could happen. The latter end of the deal is going to be interesting as we see how cap develops. But in any NFL deal of this length, those latter years will pretty much never be fully guaranteed, and we've known that, these players sign contracts all the time, and for 4 or 5 years, and you know the first couple years, as long as they're performing, they'll be there. But as the years go on, that cap hit and that salary escalates most of the time, and that's when the player gets in trouble, and that's when the club decides to release him or ask him to take a pay cut, or if he's still worth it, to take a pay cut and lengthen his salary. So it is what it is. The lack of more full guarantees, or at least complete injury guarantees, for example, is on the NFLPA in their labor negotiations with the league. Cap has put together a deal that would pay him a lot of money, but also provides an early opportunity for the 49ers to extend some other players. Both parties, and probably both parties, can live with that. People look for a clear winner and a clear loser in a negotiation, but they easily ignore the shades of gray that are part of any negotiation. And when you're talking about the NFL and its salary cap and trying to keep enough money around for the other talented players, it becomes even more gray. This is an important day for the NFL. I really believe that. They're going to elect a new NFLPA if enough people are not happy with DeMaurice Smith. So if it's Sean Gilbert, is there a lawsuit or a suit coming against the NFL citing collusion? Is some of these other candidates? Seems like the Admiral, the one guy that wants to be, it seems like he can't we all just get along type of guy, and wants to pretty much go as business as usual, and everybody deal with the current circumstances, which favor the owners a lot more than it favors the players. Or is it going to be one of the other guys that are going to make some waves and try to get back some of what the players lost, which is going to be very difficult now, unless they have a feasible plan when the CBA comes due or renewal or whatever, or they have a way to get out of the CBA and try to get another one. What are they going to do? See if they have a viable plan. And like I said, it's going to be very interesting. I think just like the presidency, just like the presidents. You can like a guy, regardless of who it is, regardless of what side of the aisle that you prefer, electing them on their potential, electing them on what you feel they can do. They can promise you everything, tell you what you want to hear for the most part, put them in office. But until they are actually in office and realize what the job entails, then you know if they can handle it or not. Then you know if that's the person that should have got, even though it sounds good, all these candidates, whoever, if they sound good too, if none of them sound good or whatever. You never really know until you're in that position. Now, DeMaurice Smith, I can guarantee you, just like everyone else knows that, you get into a position like that and you think you know what needs to be done, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to make some guffaws. You're going to do that. That comes with the job. It's just that the mistakes and goof-ups you make can't be too catastrophic, because you have people's lives and livelihoods on the line, mainly livelihoods on the line. And their lives, because you affect people's lives with not negotiating the best contract or not negotiating the best labor agreement that you could possibly get, and eliminate any loopholes that may hurt your membership. So even though a lot of these candidates may be pissed off or upset or looking for that shot of power, being an NFLPA executive director, be careful what you wish for, because everyone's going to be looking for you to save the PA. If it's not DeMaurice Smith, I can guarantee you that they're going to be looking for you to go in a different direction, excuse me, and to get back the percentage of money you lost from the last CBA. And that's going to be a tough fight with a bunch of billionaires, meaning every owner that owns an NFL team, 32 of them, including the commissioner's office that negotiated, and you agreed upon it. You're one of the weakest unions, professional unions, NHL, MLB, NBA, NFL. You're the weakest. You are the weakest. The NFL, it's a owner's league, not the NBA. I mean, NBA, they're making hands over fists, but the players are too, and their contracts are guaranteed, just like the Major League Baseball. The players union is very strong, and their contracts are guaranteed. Sure, you could say in on a piece of paper, look, my contract is guaranteed, but in reality, you and I both know, and I'm talking to you players out there, you're not guaranteed any money. That money's not guaranteed, because you could be cut at any time. Now, if the team's willing to take a salary cap hit on it, that's fine. But you can be cut at any time. And the money, unlike the NBA and the Major League Baseball, the rest of the money that you're owed, you will not get. NBA, you get it. That's why you don't see the players cut. Unless they're willing to take that hit. Unless they have the money to take that hit, they will not do that. All right. Let's take a quick break here. I've been talking for about 45 minutes. Okay, quick 2-minute break. And then we'll be back.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right. We're back. All right. Got a few minutes left in the show. About 6-7 minutes left in the show. I want to talk about, all right, you've gotten all the free agents, not all the free agents, but you've gotten a lot of big-name free agents that have been out there that have been taken up. The last bit of them included DeMarco Murray, who people were really wondering where he was going. And he finally signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. Frank Gore signed with the Indianapolis Colts. Andre Johnson signed with the Indianapolis Colts. Darrelle Revis signed with the New York Jets. Antonio Cromartie signed with the New York Jets. Byron Maxwell signed with the Eagles. Had a nice trade with Seahawks and the Saints. Jimmy Graham went to the Saints. I'm just talking about players, not draft picks. Jimmy Graham went to the Seahawks, and in return they got the Max Unger, the center from the Seahawks. You had Haloti Ngata get traded to the Detroit Lions. You had Brandon Marshall a few weeks ago get traded to the Jets. Kiko Alonso gets traded for LeSean McCoy straight up, which was a crazy trade. Sam Bradford and Nick Foles trade teams. Bradford going to the Eagles. Nick Foles going to the Rams. Sue getting a big contract from the Dolphins. But there's some other named guys out there that for some reason, and it's really slowed down. You would think that it would it'd be pretty active, but there's some named guys out there. And there's always this happens every year. You have not like this. Let me put it this way. This has been pretty crazy. The trades and the free agent signings, it's been a big frenzy, to tell you the truth. I've never seen anything like this. But what I'm saying, when it's always been after the initial wave or two waves or whatever, there's always some things subside a little bit. And what happens is this. You got some guys out there like Vince Wilfork, for instance, that got released from the world champion New England Patriots. Still got some football left in them. There's no two ways about it. All-pro, perennial all-pro nose tackle that for some reason is not being picked up by a team yet. Now, supposedly, the Texans, because of the connection with Romeo Crennel and Bill O'Brien, may have some interest in him. And I'm surprised that he hasn't been picked up. Maybe they're talking or whatever. But he's got at least a couple years left in him. He's not completely done yet. Randy Starks, another one. Defensive lineman, defensive tackle. These guys still have some dog in them. They still have some fight in them. But haven't gotten picked up yet. How about in a cornerback position, Tre'Mon Williams, Charles Tillman. You've had a flash in the pan team million from the Titans. A one-year wonder, Chris Culver, pulled in $32 million from the Redskins. And two solid veterans like Tre'Mon Williams and Charles Tillman can't find work? I understand Tillman has the injury and he has some age concerns, but he was still playing at a high level before tearing his tricep in the late part of September. How about the running back's position? Stephen Ridley still sitting out there. He's no longer with the Patriots. How about Pierre Thomas? I can't believe he's completely done. That was a salary cap hit from the Saints, who were trying to dump as much salary as possible. Linebacker position, Brandon Spikes. Wide receiver, Cecil Shorts. Tight end, and I really like this athletic tight end, Rob Housler. And in that offense in Arizona, they don't use the tight end that well or that much. But he's a viable tight end. You got Jason Witten that's getting old. Why not bring him over to the Cowboys? A successor to Jason Witten. I can't see anything wrong with that. How about Stefan Wisniewski? He's only 25 years old. There's still some guys out. They more than likely are going to get picked up very shortly. The draft is not until April 30th, so there's still time. Hopefully some of these teams that have franchise tagged their players may get a chance after everything calms down that the players are able to come to some type of agreement with a new contract and have the team the players feel a little bit better about the whole situation. Well, it's been a nice ride. I want to thank all that's been listening. I want to thank all that picked it up in the archives and listened to it. There's a lot of more interesting things that are going to happen in the way of sports, NFL included. We'll try to be covering them from week to week, as we always do. This has been JT, a.k.a. The Master. This has been The Master Plan. Talk to you next week.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров «Персональный спутник»